You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. I know there's kind of a running thing on One of Us where a lot of us, not just me, I can't take all the responsibility, like to start our reviews with singing if there's an applicable song. And I was like looking it up. There's got to be like Yes or like Lady Gaga or somebody like that had to have had a song that's like called Tesla that's all about Tesla, right? He feels like the sort of guy that these are the type of artists that would do that. But no, like not even freaking Nina Hagen or someone super weird like that. I'm like, I couldn't find a song. And then I was like, oh, wait, there was one in 1984 by Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. Yeah, we're not going there.
There's an entire band with that name that probably has something you could have used.
Who probably don't know very much about who Tesla actually were. They were not very good. Someone responded to me saying, hey, I heard the band did the score. I'm like, they decidedly did not. No, I suspect most of the band have probably either like died in poverty or hiding underneath a dumpster behind a 7-Eleven somewhere.
I thought you were just going to sing a Tears for Fears song out of sync.
Good Lord, Nathan. I used to like that song. We will get to that. And that song that Nathan is talking about specifically over the course of this review. I am Chris and joining me is Nathan.
Hey, what's up, guys?
But he's not the only one. We've also got on this one, Jordan.
Hello, and this isn't so much a movie as it is a collection of choices.
And then Luwain.
Hey, how's it going?
This is an odd little film, and it's by director Michael Almereyda, who had previously worked with Ethan Hawke and, as well, with Kyle MacLachlan, who here plays Thomas Edison, the great competitor with Nikola Tesla over electricity, AC versus DC current. I mean, that's what that movie The Current War was about. That was like about a year and a half ago, and that wasn't very good. They had both starred together in a movie by this director called Hamlet that was sort of a modern-day updated, but still with the original text version that was extremely well received. Unfortunately, the majority of the rest of the stuff by this director I have not been wildly crazy about, including his more recent adaptation of Cymbeline, also starring Ethan Hawke. But what really amused me was to find out this guy's, who's made quite a few movies, he's been in the business for a while, since the 80s, but he got an agent based on the strength of a spec script about Nikola Tesla.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like in 1982 or something. So, like, never made it. Only now he, like, revisits it, pulls it back out, and goes, yeah, I think I can still keep large parts of this. I think you can tell which parts he kept.
If this were done in the 1980s, this would explain a lot of things.
Ethan Hawke plays Nikola Tesla, who, of course, was a inventor genius who ended up first working for Thomas Edison. He was himself, Edison was an American, but Tesla had come in as an immigrant and had a very hard time of it, despite being a genius. Edison basically just ripped him off and then told him his ideas weren't worth anything. And so he was like, well, fuck you, I'm getting out of here. I'm going to start my own thing. To some amount of success for a while when he ended up working with George Westinghouse, a major investor and financial power in the world at that point, here played by Jim Gaffigan. Now, they make a lot of his relationship here with Anne Morgan, who is the daughter of another person he worked with later, J.P. Morgan, and Eve Hewson, who has been in a bunch of stuff, but I remember her best from The Nick, playing one of the lead roles on that wonderful little Steven Soderbergh-directed two-season miniseries. They make a lot of their friendship slash possibly romantic relationship, but I couldn't find any reference to them even knowing each other online, so that may have been a little bit imagined for the purposes of this, or if not that, then exactly. But she is not only kind of filling in that role, but she is also filling in the role of a narrator coming to us strangely from modern day, because she's often using a projector and working on a laptop while she talks about things that are happening on screen, all the while still dressed in her period piece clothes. But we watch this story play out, summarizing Tesla's life from basically him starting to work for Edison till things starting to fall apart for him, which they very much ended up doing. This is, as we said, not the first version of the story that we've gotten. It's certainly the first one that focused more heavily on Tesla. I think the performances are both good from these two leads here, but the director is trying to do something, and I don't know what it is.
We talked a little bit about this beforehand, that it almost feels like it's meant to be a stage play, particularly by having the Anne Morgan narration and some of the other, is it rear projection?
Yeah, it's like on a stage where they project a video image behind the performers on a white screen, so it's not even green screened.
Right.
It's like made to look stagey, and I don't understand what that was all about.
Yeah, it's not very clear, and it does do weird anachronistic things that presumably are meant to say something. I mean, there's one point where Edison and Tesla have this discussion about something, and then Edison walks away and sits at the bar and pulls out a smartphone and starts fiddling with it.
Well, he's got to check his Tinder profile.
I'm like, the director was really much more on Edison's side, I think, here, because he's like, oh yeah, Edison invented the smartphone. He just didn't tell anyone for a while.
Yes, because Thomas Edison is totally not a dickhead, you guys. Psst, he is.
I found its structure to be so interesting, and I kind of like that it wasn't beholden to capturing any real time period. But by the end of it, it just sort of felt like a drunk history episode.
It kind of did.
I was with you at first, Nathan, on that. I was like, okay, this is interesting. Where are you going with this? But by the end, I went, so why did you do that?
Yeah.
What purpose did that serve doing it that way? And I sat and thought about it, and I finally actually came to the point where I was like, okay, I'm going to search for an interview with this director so I can try and get some insight. And I actually pulled out this quote. Specifically, there's a scene here. I figured this is the one that people talk about the most, where out of nowhere, they switch to Ethan Hawke as Tesla, you know, in the outfit with the accent and everything, getting on stage with a modern-day mic and karaoke machine and singing karaoke Tears for Fears, right? Obviously, you know, a little anachronistic.
A bit. It just slams you in the face out of nowhere.
So I was like, you got to have a really good version in film for making a decision that bold. So this is a direct quote from him on this. This song isn't offered as a personal reference or a nostalgic souvenir, but as another way of getting at Tesla's emotional life, the way shy people can open up and almost break loose if they find themselves confronted with the right karaoke track. It's both an upbeat anthem and a confession of loss. And I went, okay, the only way anyone is ever going to get that is you actually saying it out loud in an interview. Because it makes no sense in the context of the film. These are also not things that the movie really focuses on so much. They're really kind of minor elements of the film. Tesla was famously kind of a guy who kept to himself a lot, except for when he would go on angry rants. And Ethan Hawke plays him like that. Everything's very close to the chest, but it doesn't explore him as an introvert, per se. It actually spends more time exploring him as kind of a blowhard.
And Ethan Hawke's performance is good, but in that scene, it doesn't inform any of the choices that the director is saying that he made. I find that to be such an interesting quote, because he's stoic the entire time and singing it out of tune.
You bring up how it feels like a stage play and such. It does. It feels like a very experimental stage play that feels like an art house take on a biopic about arguably, yes, one of the most fascinating men in history, at least to me. And there's things I like. I agree with Nathan. I really like Ethan Hawke's performance in this. All the acting's very good. Kyle MacLachlan is wonderful as Thomas Edison. I even like Eve Hewson in this weird double role. And surprisingly, Jim Gaffigan as George Westinghouse.
I kept going with him, oh, that's Jim Gaffigan, every time he talked.
Structurally, this movie really doesn't work. It does meander, goes all over the place, and at times, it really does drag. But when you get some good character moments, like that conversation between Edison and Tesla.
You're talking about the ice cream scene?
Yes, that's one of them. I really liked that.
That's the main reason to watch this movie is the ice cream scene.
Yes,
and you guys, honestly, if you're thinking about renting and watching this, it takes place really early in the film. So you can like totally Batman out if you're done at that point. But that is worth watching it for.
Well, and then it does this weird thing, though, where it's like, yeah, but that didn't happen. Okay, So are you just teasing me with that? What is that?
I think that was setting up the thing that they keep going in the movie, like anachronisms, the modern day anachronisms. But that doesn't even make sense because that's a totally different type of thing. This whole thing felt like it was a guy who was still kind of in love with the person who he was when he wrote the script in the 80s and didn't want to get rid of a lot of it, but wanted to write a new script as well with who he is now. And these two scripts just didn't fit together at all.
Yeah, it's kind of like what Ray Bradbury said, where it's like, hey, if you want to become an author, write your first novel, then bury it in the backyard, and then write your first novel. He came back and he dug it up and he tried to make it work and it didn't work.
Every once in a while it managed to do things that would catch my attention, genuinely, but then it wouldn't follow those threads. And I find that a lot of the stuff with Tesla that's the most interesting is when we get into the part of his life people don't know as much about, when he started to be successful, but then he went off and just blew lots of money on these inventions that today no one knows if they would even work or not, based on his notes. Like, he had all
probably
these
not
bizarre ideas, like the earthquake machine and all these things that people were like, well, he was a genius. And people were like, yeah, it looks like this could have worked, but his notes are unfinished. And there are claims that he actually made them work. Like, the earthquake machine, supposedly the story is he made it work and then destroyed his formula for it so no one could use it.
Now, that's a movie I'd like to explore, like that hypothetical.
It's just going to be a Gerard Butler action movie.
God damn it, no.
Gerard Butler is Nikola Tesla.
Whatever helps him pay for his apartment.
I would watch that.
I'm Nikola Tesla, and I'm gonna rock your world. The movie did get meandering to the point where I was just waiting for Ethan Hawke to transform into David Bowie and to see Hugh Jackman come up to his estate.
I actually quite liked this particular version that Ethan Hawke played in general. I think it's a terrific performance, except for points where his accent slips, but it seems clear that's on purpose. That's a director choice, not an actor choice, and I was baffled as to why it was happening. I like most of the casting here. Like I said, I really have issues with Gaffigan in that role only because I felt like he, even under that huge beard, I was still like, yep, that's Jim Gaffigan. I mean, James Urbaniak has one of the most distinctive voices on the planet, and I couldn't tell that was him. But I don't know. Let's go to final thoughts, because I don't know how long we can even go on into this. This is a historical record. It's like, with the exception of its anachronisms, it's kind of just, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. LaWayne, why don't you get us started?
There's not a lot to talk about. I mean, the McLaughlin and Hawke are fine in their roles. I mean, the roles expect them to do some weird things, but their performances are fine. I'm going to blame the director for everything I didn't like, I guess. I don't know. After having seen Radioactive, the biopic about Marie Curie, and how they dealt with some anachronistic stuff, it was even harder to be impressed with this one. I think in the end, this movie's, it's fine. I don't know that it told me anything new. I don't know that it was very interesting as overall. I'm going to give it 2 out of 5 issues of Light and Darkness War.
Jordan.
Great performances, especially by Ethan Hawke and Kyle MacLachlan, but this movie really doesn't work in a lot of ways. It will take huge, hard left turns from where you think it's going to somewhere else completely. I admire that, honestly, and I admire some of the choices here. I do happen to think the music and cinematography also really work for me. And the anachronisms often can and don't work. I'll give it 6 Tesla coils out of 10.
And now his mission, which he has chosen to accept. Nathan, that's just a reference to his podcast, Mission Impossible.
Yeah, everybody listen to it now. This would be an interesting failure if it had more energy behind it. Sarcasm, rimshot, whatever. A lot of the scenes drag. I wanted to like it more than I did. I thought Ethan Hawke showed up for work, same with Kyle MacLachlan. By the end of it, I would have rather seen this as a stage play and maybe would have recommended it that way, but I can't recommend it unless you're an Ethan Hawke or Kyle MacLachlan completist. This is 5.5 out of 10 vanilla ice cream cones.
Can't believe it wasn't till you that the ice cream cones got chosen as the thing.
Yeah,
I was like, I can't believe it. I might actually get to pick ice cream cones, but no. It's kind of stage play-ish more than it's movie-ish. It looks cheap, like it's just a cheap device, especially with the projection screen stuff, where at first I was like, is this just really shitty green screen? And then I was like, no, it's, holy crap, they actually are just doing a projection setup. Why? And the movie never has an answer for you for that. And so consequently, it doesn't seem like a device that means anything. It looks like, well, shit, we were out of money. We couldn't afford to take our actors to Colorado. I don't know what was going on there. And there's just a lot of the stuff that stands out like that. You're like, but why? And the movie doesn't have an answer for you. If it's all held so close to his chest as the karaoke scene was, then I suspect the answers also would not be satisfying for those things as well. I like films that take chances. I like films that play with the surreal or even the absurd, but you got to have a good reason for doing it, or you've got to be consistent about it. And this movie is neither. At the end, I can't say I was bored because it kept doing strange things, but I was ultimately not taken with it whatsoever. I'm going to give this 4 out of 10 narrative Maid Marians. Anybody remember that Eve Hewson was Maid Marian in that wonderfully terrible Last Robin Hood adaptation?
Like the one of Taron Egerton?
Yeah.
People remember that movie?